talking with Rutherford County newsmakers for 78 years. This is WGNS Action Line. Now, your host, Bart Walker.
We're going to be going down memory lane right now. For anybody who's lived in Murfreesboro for any length of time, you've gone to Demas Restaurant. That's a place people have gone for decades. And you remember Peter's parents both there. I can remember your mom coming up to the tables on a regular basis to see how we are doing, but really to check on the quality. She was right there to make sure that the food was as it should be.
You know, my mother always, you know, that was something that she actually struggled with. My mother was an extreme introvert. So for her, that was very hard for her to do that. It was the way that she could check on, and she would ask questions directly to see, is the server doing what they're supposed to be doing? And then if there was a food issue, obviously, that she was there too, to be able to deal with it and respond to it immediately. You know, we have always been very proud of how we respond to customers and them giving us that feedback right away. Have we been perfect at it? Absolutely not. But at the same time, what we try to do is that whenever we recognize there is a problem, we try to deal with it right away as well. Even now, it's part of our training process of all of our managers. So one of the things that we've initiated from our management side of things is that the managers, when they stand near trash cans, they are to look to ensure that food has been eaten. If the food is not eaten, they are to go to the table and drop off the check themselves at the table because they want to make certain that the customer is taken care of. They're also required to call on tables, and the managers are actually bonused now on whether or not they call on tables or not, based off of the comment cards that we get. So it is something that is extremely important for us that we have taken something that she started and that she saw the success in, and that we are trying to be able to scale it in a way that we can ensure, again, that the customer experience is exactly what we've always wanted it to be.
It was always a positive having her come up and just talk to you for a while.
And that was the thing, because sometimes it's kind of awkward. I'll be honest, when I go, some people want to talk to you, some people don't want to be interrupted at all. So it is an uncomfortable thing at times. But when you have those customers that want to talk with you, it's so nice. And again, you get to just know the people in the community. You get to know who they are. I don't get to do it as often as she did. But at the same time, when I work in the stores, depending on which location I'm in, it's one of those things that I've just always enjoyed being able to talk to the customers. And again, just not only just get their feedback, but we like to serve people. That's who we are, as part of our values that we have as a family, not just as a business, but as a family. And so because we like to serve people, you know, just talking with people is something that we enjoy doing. And again, it's unusual because my entire family are introverts, except my wife, Kristen. My father is an introvert. My sister is. I am. My daughter is. My son is. My grandparents were introverts. I mean, we like to serve people. And so as a result, it's one of those things that we enjoy doing, which, again, is unusual from an aspect of coming from an introverted point of view.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned she was an introvert. Doris Demas would come up and she would just ask bold questions and she would share things. She was your best friend, even if you didn't know her. She would share how she got you and your wife together. And she would share, I'm sure you've heard that story.
Oh, yes, of course, yes.
Does that ever make you feel unusual that everybody knows Peter Demas?
You know, there is sometimes that can be kind of weird, because a lot of times people feel very comfortable doing things that they wouldn't feel comfortable doing to people that they don't know. And they, so I'll give you an example. I was standing looking over the dining room, kind of just seeing what was going on, and I was paying attention just to something that was happening at one of the tables. And a customer walked by who I've never met before, poked me in the stomach and said, "You're getting fat." I mean, literally touched me in the stomach. And, you know, if you were to do that on just somebody on the street, that would be considered to be really, really bad form. But again, they feel part of our family. And it's one of those things, it's okay. Did I want someone to tell me I'm fat? No. But at the same time, it's just kind of part of where it is. And I like the fact that people feel comfortable enough around us. But to go back to what you were saying earlier, my mother was always a very direct person. She did not have any problems saying things, and she could get away with saying certain things to customers that nobody else could. If my father and I did it, we'd been punched in the face. I remember one time, right when we first started, and we were not busy at all, and then we started slowly building up, and we went on a wait, and we had these customers that would always come in and just immediately walk over and sit at their table. Well, they were on a wait, and they couldn't do it. And they were mad about it. And my mother took one of them by the hand and walked him around the dining room and said, "You tell me which table to get up so that you can sit there." If I were to do that, oh, it would have been awful. But he laughed and thought it was the funniest thing ever. So she had this ability to do that. And I think it's just because, again, one thing that we strive is that we want to be genuine. We want to be who we are. Whether you like us or not like us, we are what you see. We're not trying to be somebody else. We're not trying to be fake, you know? And I think people can appreciate people being genuous versus not always knowing. And I think that was one of the huge values that not only did she bring, but she was able to teach so many other people as well.
Peter, your father was in restaurants even as a boy. He grew up there in the family restaurants in the Birmingham area. And as a grown man decided, I don't want to be a part of that. What made him decide to get back into restaurants?
He may have had a stroke right beforehand. No, I'm just teasing. He worked in restaurants since he was 9. He did not want to be in the restaurant business. In fact, he said two things he would never do was he would never get married and he would never work in restaurants.
Both didn't happen.
Both did not happen. So, but he got in the motion picture theater business when he was old enough to work from somebody besides his family. He started out as an usher and worked his way up. He was a city manager over a period of time. He was transferred. It was not a very good paying job. And he decided he was going to do something else. And he left and actually opened up Charlestown Landing in Charleston, South Carolina, which is where I was born. And while he was there, he saw a Western Sizzlin' Steakhouse and thought that restaurant looks so much different than the one he grew up in. And he thought it would give him an opportunity to be able to provide for his family better. And he liked having the system set in place that he didn't have to try to create each time. And so he ended up getting the franchise, coming to Nashville. And in the fourth restaurant he opened was here in Murfreesboro. I think it was either 1974 or 1976 when he opened that one up. And it's right down on Broad Street, all the way past Church Street. Oh, I can't think of it. It's the chicken place, a Party Fowl.
Oh, yeah, I know where you do. Yeah, right near the radio station.
Yes, yeah, it's right there. Yeah, Party Fowl. Before that was a Santa Fe, or there was a lot of other restaurants. I know there was Santa Fe was there at one time. Trapper's was there. And so, yeah, he built that building and opened up the Western Sizzlin' there. And this is actually where they fell in love with the community so much and why they decided to move here.
Peter, I remember stories of your father, Jim Demas, going into the kitchen and creating a new dish and then letting the family taste it. Has that tradition moved to you?
I do. For example, you know, we recently rolled out a limited time only menu. Part of that is to help with doing that, because a lot of times we can't just keep adding to the menu. Otherwise, it becomes too big. We can't manage it in the kitchen, etc. You know, but one of the things that I absolutely love, meatloaf. And so we added meatloaf to a limited time only menu. It comes out about 3 or 4 times a year. And so, but I love cooking with it. I love trying to find the different recipes. So I do it, but honestly, so much of what I do, either we can't replicate it in large quantities, or it doesn't make that 90% approval rate. And again, we want to make certain that customers get, and whether they love it, doesn't matter whether Peter likes it. I can still make it at home. It matters whether or not they love it and whether or not we can make it and also make it in an affordable price. You know, we can't do something so fancy that no one can afford to buy it. So there's a lot of factors that go into it now that we play with it. But no, I'm constantly experimenting and cooking at home, and I'm always on, different diets. And so I try different things that might be healthy or not healthy. And like my father, I just have better technology than he had.
Now, one thing that you had said a while back on the radio, and you may not have even realized you said it, but once you said it, I grabbed into that and I thought, I'd never heard that before. And you said, we don't ever have anything that's fried. We just don't fry food.
It actually wasn't for health reasons, honestly. My father said when he opened up Demas's, he said there were three things he was never going to have: fried food, baked potatoes, and honey mustard. I don't know what he had against honey mustard. There was but some reason he did not want honey mustard. So that one, I don't know. With the baked potatoes, I work my way backwards to answer your question. With baked potatoes, it was because baked potatoes takes basically an hour to cook. And so you always have to have more baked potatoes, and then you're throwing away a lot of baked potatoes. So then it was the question of, what do we do with the leftover baked potatoes? For us, what we do is we that's where we make our hash browns. We take the leftover baked potatoes and we dice them and make hash browns, and then we grill the hash browns with them. And then with the fryers, the big thing there was fryers are terrible to clean. They're terrible to keep the restaurant clean. The fryer oil gets in your clothes and you cannot get it out. And it also makes your employees and your managers stay longer to close down the kitchen. So his thought process was, we're never going to bring in fryers because there was no reason to have them. And it was just such a pain to manage and to operate. I've managed restaurants, I've run restaurants that had fryers in them, and he's absolutely 100% right. And if I can get away with no fryers, I would have gotten away with no fryers. He gave up on the honey mustard and he gave up on the baked potatoes, but the fried food. And now we couldn't do it anyway. We've added so much different kitchen equipment and different things. Even if we wanted to put fried food in, there's nowhere to put it. The only way we'd put it in is to, I guess we'd have to get rid of all of our employees to make everything fit.
Well, Jim, if you're listening, thank you. It just really is healthier.
And it is. And we've strived for that as we started adding to the menus, you know. And one of the things that we recognized a while back, and, you know, and we're seeing a trend in our country as a whole of trying to, you know, make America healthy again. That catchphrase. But, you know, for us, you know, eating is your own personal accountability. I get to choose what I put in my body and what I don't put in my body. And so I can choose to eat healthy or I can choose to not eat healthy. And so we want to make certain that people have that options. And so we have a low calorie menu. We have a low carb menu. I can eat at Demas's every single day and lose weight with no problem at all.
Let's go back now to your early days in elementary school, high school. As you were going through classes, you were doing stuff just like all the other kids around you. What did you think you would be doing 20, 30, 40 years later? Did you ever think, I'll be doing just what my mom and dad are doing?
No, for many reasons. Actually, my mother started out. So when I was in school, for our family, it's very important that a parent is at home with their children when they get home from school. So my mother did all the bookkeeping for my father. And so I would come home from school and she was in the office. She worked out of the home. So I definitely didn't think I was doing that because I absolutely hate paperwork with a passion. You know, throughout high school and in college, my number one goal was to be a lawyer. And I wanted to be a lawyer. I wanted to help people. One of the few times my father ever allowed me to skip school was to go with him one time to court. My father was a witness in a criminal case. And so we got to go to court. I got to watch the process and I just loved the process. I loved the argumentation that was listening to, that was going on, the systems that were set up. And so I wanted to be a lawyer ever since then. But while I was going to college, while I was going, even in law school, I was still working part-time at restaurants. And particularly here at Demas's when I was here in college. And then in law school, I was working at other places. When I came back to practice law, I realized that I enjoyed working with people in the restaurant business a lot more than I enjoyed practicing law. So even though I still have my license up to date, I actually had to go to court not that long ago as a lawyer to make an argument for our company. But even though I still do that, again, mostly what I do is things with a restaurant. But I just enjoy working with people and especially our employees. I just did not realize and appreciate it until I got away from it, how much it's in your blood. It just stays.
So in what you are branching into now, you're helping people go through some challenging periods in their lives because we are living in a challenging world at times. Have you become cynical on the world today, or do you look at this as a new opportunity to do things better?
I think the answer to that is yes on both. you know, I'm Gen X, and Gen X were cynical about everything. So I think that's just part of our whole generation. It defines who we are. Yeah, I'm very cynical when I look at the world, but the world is not where we place our hope in. We're not supposed to put our hope into the world. But I also look at it as opportunities to be able to talk to other people and help people guide through what's happening in their lives. And that's both our employees and our customers and just people who, you know, just are out there. You know, it is shocking to me to watch people take things that aren't important, whether, you know, and there are on some level, whether it's, you know, politics or race or gender or whatever it is. And I have opinions about all of that. And I express those opinions very openly, very directly. But to allow it to divide us in such a way where we can't even tolerate each other and get along with each other. And for me, my basis of belief, it comes from a Christian worldview. Everything I look at is through the criteria of the Bible, the criteria of what is true. And so therefore, when this world is crazy and everything is bad going on around me, it doesn't affect me because I know who I am. I'm a child of God. I know where I will be 100 years from now. I'm not worried about that. And so the stuff that's happening now is just, for me, opportunities that present itself to be able to tell people what truth is. You know, that there is such a thing as morality. There is such a thing as right and wrong. We may disagree on the level of where it falls, but we cannot just ignore the fact that it's out there. And I think we're so lost and so confused because we've lost that framework and people don't know where that framework is. And it's really simple. It just rests with not what's out there. It's not a politician, but it rests with Jesus. And I think that's just and that's what gives us hope. Before I got saved, I can't imagine how I'd be living this life right now. I think I would be so angry. I don't know how I could have handled what was going on right now.
So you think that's possibly where a lot of the conflict comes from, the anger, people believing differently, either extremely one side or extremely the other side. Do you think we'll ever see a time when we're seeing a lot of people that are right down the middle, where you have a little of both sides?
I think the biggest way to be able to do that is we have to eliminate social media or put the regulations on social media to such an extent where we don't live in an echo chamber. I think right now what happens is that I believe one way, and whether, again, I'm conservative or liberal in my views, and I follow certain people that are going to support my views because it's more important that I feel validated than what I feel otherwise. And then what happens is it keeps adding and adding and adding and makes me more and more extreme. And I don't think people have the wisdom or discernment to recognize that there's another side out there. So then they see the other side as just wrong and hate and angry with them. And so if somebody were to come and say, hey, this behavior is not healthy for you, you know, this behavior leads to more anxiety, more depression, it leads to more suicide, it leads to more drug use, it leads to, you know, more alcoholism, you know, abuse, all the stuff that people feel inside or that manifest from that fear that's living inside of them, they can't believe it because they have been reinforced by these social media giants who create the algorithms to make you feel better about yourself. And until we can start saying, hey, we can start learning on both sides and recognizing that, I don't think it's going to be possible as long as we're reliant on that for us to find a way to the middle, unless people become intentional about doing so. And I'll tell you, for me, it's very difficult. I have to really put forth effort and energy to find people that disagree with me on social media because, you know, I just kind of will scroll through and I'm finding the exact same thing and I have to search for it and look it up. But I think if we're not intentional and diligent, yeah, then it's very easy for us just to fall into that trap and use our brains. The other thing I think has to change radically is our education system. We have to stop worrying about getting people passing a test and start getting people learning how to think. And I think once people start learning how to think, they will recognize that it's not just something that they're being fed with and they have to memorize, but it's actually something that can be discussed and that they can at least see the other side. I may disagree disagree with you wholeheartedly. But at least I can say, okay, I understand where you're coming from. I may personally think you're an idiot, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you are. And it doesn't mean that, but as long as I can understand where you're coming from, at least at that point in time, we can find unique ways to be able to find things in common. FBI hostage negotiators, the first thing they do with the hostage taker is they find the things that they can agree on. We can agree this is a stressful situation. And by doing so, that's how they build rapport. And until we start trying to find those areas that we can agree on, even if we strongly disagree, it's hard to build that rapport with each other.
Now, you said we need to get rid of social media. You go into a restaurant, you don't see people talking. They're playing with their phones. I mean, the whole family, whoever's at the table, they're all not communicating. Is this one of the things that would be corrected if we got rid of social media, back to talking to each other?
You know, my wife and I, we had a very, very difficult time in part of our marriage. In fact, it was so bad that a marriage counselor even recommended we get a divorce. Like, that's how bad we were. And one of the things when we started really putting forth an effort and energy into our marriage, we said we're going to go on a weekly date night. It didn't have to be at a restaurant. It didn't have to be anywhere fancy. The date night could have been we walked around Target or Walmart all day, you know, or all night. But the rule was, is we were not allowed to have our cell phones. We could, if we got a notification, we could check to see if it wasn't the babysitter, making certain our kids were okay. But for the most part, that was what we were trying to do. But yeah, I see that in the restaurant, see with families. Now, I've also been guilty of it too. There are a lot of times though, especially we go on like a 10-day, 2-week vacation as a family. And, you know, by day 13, we're all on our phones because we run out of things to say, you know? So, and I look around, I'm like, people are thinking the same way about us as we think about other people. But no, I do think that it's absolutely critical. One of the things that we used to ask our kids at night is we would say, what can we pray for you for? And they would start telling us things that happened in their school day that we never would have found out otherwise. But by asking that and giving them permission to talk, they can have those conversations. And I think, again, that's part of that component that we're missing. And then we're wondering why we're not an influence in our children's lives is because they don't know who we are. They only know us through the phones, and their phone is having more influence than they are. And I think it's just critical that parents get back to talking to their children.
So if we can solve this social media problem, we will solve the family problem. We will solve the world problem.
I wish it was that simple. You know, because it's not like we didn't have problems in the 80s as well, you know, but I do think it is a step in the right direction. And I think, again, you know, so many times we look at this world and it's so overwhelming and you're like, I don't know where to start. And I think it's so helpful to have the age old expression, how do you eat an elephant? You eat it one bite at a time. And I think that's what we have to do. I think that's just one of those steps. I think it's important that people, I think one of the steps is that we have to bring prayer back in public schools. I think that's a critical step that takes place. Do I think it'll solve people? Do I think all of a sudden everyone will become Christian overnight? No, but I think it allows people to recognize that there is something bigger than them. And there's someone out there that they can try to, again, start that understanding of knowing where right and wrong begins with. You know, it is interesting to me to watch people who are atheists to say there is, use phrases such as that's wrong. And I'm like, the only basis that you have to determine right and wrong comes from the Word of God. It doesn't come from anywhere else. And so they're basically stealing from Christianity to say there's no such thing as Christianity. It doesn't make logical sense. So from that, in order to determine, hey, that's evil, in order to determine that's bad, they have to have that foundation of what is good. And then the only way to know what is good is to know who is good. And I think that's a big part of where that comes into play.
Do you think we'll see that happen in our lifetime?
I'm hopeful. You know, people did not think that Roe v. Wade would be overturned, for example, in their lifetime. And it did. you know, I don't ever want to put God in a box. We've seen revival happen in the past. I think we'll see revival happen again. We, matter of fact, we know that during the end of days, you know, there's going to be a huge amount of revival and a huge amount of evil that occur at the same time. So we don't know. So there will definitely be something that will happen. I just don't know how it'll look. And but definitely don't want to put God in a box. I'm very hopeful that that will happen, because otherwise, why would I strive to try to make it happen or strive to make society better? There's no reason for me to make things better if I don't have hope that it would occur. And right now we see people who are damaged. We see people who are hurt and who are suffering that go beyond just economics. If I didn't think we could, but the truth of the matter is God put me in this place for the circle that I can influence. And that's all I can do. I can't worry about the circle of people that I don't get to influence. And so if I did my share and you did yours, and the people listening to this did their share, I do think we have it. I think, though, that apathy prevents some people from doing it, and therefore, because again, they're overwhelmed and they think, well, it doesn't matter. One person matters. And again, that one person may lead to somebody else, which then may lead to 14 different people. The person, if you look at the chain of people who through salvations that came from Billy Graham, you can actually go back to the shoe store manager that actually shared the gospel with D.L. Moody. And so literally that one guy led to multiple revivals, including D.L. Moody, Billy Sunday, and Billy Graham, and a couple other pretty big names in the middle. I can't remember them now. So it's just that one guy led one person to Christ, which led thousands and hundreds of thousands of people, millions of people to Christ throughout a course of time. So yeah, it's just one person. Just because you don't get to see the result doesn't mean it's not there.
There is the side of Peter Demas that maybe you had not seen before. Peter, thank you for sharing.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to share.
Peter Demas from Demas Family Restaurant, another family business here in the heart of Tennessee.
This is a WGNS Action Line. Action Line. Talking with Rutherford County newsmakers for 78 years. Celebrating 78 years of being your good neighbor station.